Welcome to the Rooted in Change podcast.
Hey everyone, my name is Jan and you're listening to the Rooted in Change podcast. This show features European clean tech champions and their solutions to tackle the climate crisis. Today's guest is Aris, the founder and CEO of Neology. Now, hydrogen is one of the topics that everyone chats regularly about, and discussions range from the color of hydrogen to potential use cases. Neology is placed on the supply side of hydrogen. They have developed a technology that efficiently converts ammonia into hydrogen, and we'll learn more about how that works in just a second. Welcome, Aris.
Hi, Jan. Pleasure to be on the podcast today and to exchange with you on hydrogen.
Lovely to have you. As with all my other guests, the first question is always, what's your background? What's your story? So tell me.
Yes, maybe you can hear from my accent. I'm French speaking, but from Switzerland. So I'm Swiss, born in Lausanne, did my studies at EPFL, so around the corner, in electrical engineering, then spent my career in Japan. Since my graduation time, I went to Japan, work in the automotive industry, Toyota tier one supplier, and then came back after a few years, after 6 years in Japan, came back to Europe, but to continue working in Toyota Group Company in Cologne, actually, in Germany. At Toyota Motorsport. And during that time, I was doing some engineering, but then also decided to get away slightly from the corporate world and start Neology. That's the moment I was exposed to hydrogen, got the problem of hydrogen. And to finish on me, I did an executive MBA at IMD Business School. That's also the transition time when you get to your midlife crisis, I would say, right. Which is the moment I left the corporate. I did an EMBA and I started a startup. So it's all at the same time.
Well, I compared to other midlife crises, I would say that's a very useful training point to leave corporate and start a business.
It's a very engineered way of doing a midlife crisis, if maybe, you can call it that way, yes.
Yeah, compared to, you know, buying fancy sports cars.
Exactly.
that's what I think.
Yes.
The smart way to go about it.
Yes.
And look, we all already mentioned Neology. So what's the problem that you're solving?
So at Neology, we address the problem of hydrogen storage and distribution, especially when you think of production of hydrogen and utilization of hydrogen will likely not happen in the same place. And the thing, I mean, I guess you're aware, hydrogen is a small molecule that requires compression or liquefaction to be dense, to be then transported efficiently. And one other way is to actually not transport hydrogen, which is using other, let's say, synthetic liquids, such as the one we're using. So we're using ammonia to solve that problem. But let's say the challenge we want to solve, and that was also the time I was at Toyota, is I saw those fuel cells working. I thought that's a nice piece of technology that has a huge potential, but you have to solve the infrastructure of supplying hydrogen. Otherwise, it's never going to happen. And that's where we are at Neology.
Right. Because maybe we can dive actually into sort of the wider landscape of hydrogen first before we focus more on Neology. Because I mentioned also the different colors, right? So there's green hydrogen produced from electricity. I think there's blue hydrogen produced from gas. And what you're saying is there's going to be a physical distance between where hydrogen is produced and where hydrogen is then used, consumed in use case and application. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, if you think of the landscape, and so maybe I can just touch a word on the colors and to make it simple. And now they try to remove the colors because it's confusing to people. But if you still think in the colors, you have the black, gray, brown, whatever, dark colors, which refer to fossil fuel base, where you crack natural gas or use it from coal, and then you produce hydrogen. That's a very emitting way, or the most the worst way to extract hydrogen from a different molecule. Then you have what they call blue, purple, yellow, which would be all this middle color, where you use other ways. So you're actually blue, which is the one you referred, is when you capture CO2 from those emitting process. And then the green, which is what everybody's looking at, is to produce from electrolysis, cracking water, to make hydrogen. And there is recently the call about the white one, or I've seen also gold one. I'm not so sure if I'm, and sorry if I'm a mistake on this, but the white one would be the natural.
I think they're
one.
about the same, right? Like I've read both terms for the same.
Yes. And so it depends also on who talks about it, but the white one would be the natural one you extract from the ground, which is still, I think, unknown if it really exists or if it's easy to take. But anyway, going back to your question, on your point of moving hydrogen, if you want to produce renewable hydrogen, which is this clean green hydrogen, then you'll have to do where renewable energy is cheap and affordable and available. And that's the issue, because where you consume the energy is not necessarily where you have access to those energy or renewable. And for example, if you take Europe, the electricity generation, even though it's getting cleaner, is still very expensive. And just going through the physics of making hydrogen from electrolysis, you'll easily get to a pretty expensive hydrogen utilization. So you rather want to produce it where electricity is almost close to zero, where there's affordable space, as well as space is another issue because you want solar or wind. And then you have to decide how you want to transport it, because again, you cannot transport it in pipelines. Even the European government commission is looking for this EU network. I'm looking forward to seeing it once. I've talked to many experts. It's extremely challenging. Blending in other pipeline like natural gas is like blending whiskey into beer, and then you want to sell it still as a whiskey. It doesn't work. So, and that was a comment from a hydrogen supplier, which I loved actually.
Yeah, so, it's a good picture, right? Like,
yes, I mean, you're producing
proposition is
something
being made over and over again.
Exactly. And this blending element is really like you have something that's such a high value that you blend it, something has no more value, and then you need to revalue it after the extraction later on. So you have to purify. So it's very complex to transport hydrogen. And when we looked at the issue is, or let's say one solution was, okay, if we produce it, let's say in the places where a lot of sun and wind available, let's say north of Europe or in the southern hemisphere, then how do you bring it back with something that exists? Because again, if you start from, oh, let's make everything from zero, okay, we can
yeah,
invent.
That's going to be expensive.
Yes, and it's going to take time. It's probably never going to happen before 2050, which is where we want to get net zero. So of course, if we did not have the timeline or the clicking talk, the clock, sorry, we could eventually take time as we want, but we don't really have this comfort. Therefore, we decided to use ammonia, because ammonia is, again, it's just NH3. It's existing infrastructure, it's liquid, it's low pressure. There's some challenges, of course. I'm not saying it's easy and it's not harmful, but we see it as a vector of hydrogen and potentially of energy in general.
Right. And so what you're saying just on the last point of ammonia is the infrastructure for ammonia is already in place, and compared to transporting hydrogen in, well, a liquid or a gaseous form, it's relatively easy to transport and relatively low risk, right?
Yes, I mean, when you look at the infrastructure, first, ammonia produced worldwide is the second most produced chemicals.
Right, so because it's being used in agriculture and I guess
it has
chemical.
A fertilizer. It's a fertilizer, basically. But it means we don't really use the H content of the ammonia. We rather use the N content. But then ammonia is usually converted into fertilizer, which is not just, we don't spray directly ammonia into fields. There are different forms of ammonia-based fertilizers. And this infrastructure exists. There's a limited infrastructure in terms of transportation. So it doesn't mean that the whole ammonia that 200 megatons is transported. I think it's between 15 to 20% maximum of that, or maybe 10. Well, actually, it's going to increase, because again, it goes to the fact that, oh, if we can produce ammonia somewhere and you can use it elsewhere and you can optimize the production somewhere and divide also the problem. That's also something which sometimes people don't necessarily like. But I think dividing the challenge makes it more affordable for everyone. And you can get some countries or companies focusing into energy production while others can benefit from using it. And that's something that we have done up to now. We have seen issues. The thing with ammonia, again, doesn't need to have any fossil fuel, doesn't require it. So you can get away from the geopolitics, even though It's easy to say. In the reality, it's not that easy because the geopolitics still blocks everything related to energy. When any country is saying, any country say, I'm going to produce ammonia, I'm going to sell it to whatever country, it has some implication. And ammonia and hydrogen were used for also explosives. So that's another, story, part of the story that maybe we have to take into consideration. But then in terms of infrastructure, of production, utilization, and transportation, it's known. Okay. We master this one. And there's some challenges when you want to store large amounts. So that's why now Europe is investing, large companies are investing into terminals like Rotterdam, there's Rostock. Rostock already has one. And then other places, I think in Italy and Croatia, they're also preparing. Spain is also preparing terminals where they can accept and bunker or put a lot of ammonia stored there and then distribute. But
okay,
yeah. That's and this is linked to the maritime again. It goes, maritime is going strongly in the direction of ammonia again. Yeah.
Okay. That was super helpful on the great landscape. And now going back to neology. So
yes.
Once you have the ammonia, what happens and what's the secret sauce and sort of why, what's your approach to converting that ammonia into hydrogen? And what do you do that no one else does? So that, a number of questions in one question.
Yes, I see. And I can even add something because one might think from what I just explained, ammonia is potentially the fuel or the liquid we might want to use. Why don't we use it directly? Because that's the thought everyone should have. And
right.
That's what the thought I had as initially. I said, why don't we use this one? The challenge is to use it as an energy vector. So if you want to burn it, it doesn't burn well. If you want to use it in a fuel cell, direct fuel cell in ammonia doesn't work actually at the moment. I mean, there are some studies on how to use direct ammonia fuel cell. I think it's very low TRL and there's a lot of challenges to overcome because again, it ammonia being on top toxic, it's also corrosive. So materials are not really happy to have ammonia in their face usually. So you have to be careful with what kind of elements. But so when we looked, or I looked at this problem a few years ago, I thought, oh, I need to actually probably crack it. And that's not an old, it's not a new technology. That's a pretty old technology. I thought, well, why don't we use crackers? And the thing is, crackers usually are large scale and they're very energy intense processes. And that's where we at Neology started to think of, oh, there must be a different way to reduce the energy consumption, make it efficient, make it small scale, that you could actually have it anywhere. And that's exactly on that element that we focused and where we have a small scale cracker, compact cracker, which is electrically heated. That's also one element. We don't want to have any combustion in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you emit gases or
right.
You could have even NOx, and NOx is much worse than CO2. So we have to be careful in the process we do. But the idea is to crack ammonia at low temperature. The lowest, the better, because temperature means energy you inject into the system. And that's what we're focusing. So we have novel catalysts. We develop new catalysts. And we also work with suppliers in Europe to get a scalable catalyst, not just a catalyst that works in the lab, but something we can use at scale, to then integrate in our reactor, which is an integrated reactor with the heating system. And then we basically crack ammonia. Cracking ammonia means we split again NH3 into hydrogen and nitrogen.
Right.
And then in the process, we also purify. The purification is also very challenging in terms of technology. So we have different ways to purify. It depends mostly on the application. Some applications require very high purities, like fuel cells. Therefore, we have a certain purification technique. And others do not require that purity level, like combustion engine application. Therefore, we have a different way. But in general, we need to crack and then purify. That's what we're focusing at Neology.
Gotcha. I have two follow-up questions.
Yes.
So one is probably the easier one. What happens with the nitrogen? So, because I would assume that, for example, in fuel cells application, you use the hydrogen, but what happens with the nitrogen?
So nitrogen is actually an interesting one, and it evolved from the, if I would have answered a year ago, it would have been, we just put it back in air. That's what you breathe.
Right.
Doesn't harm. But actually we realized that some client value it. And that's a very interesting, actually, discussion we have. Nitrogen is used for fire prevention. So you, by again reducing the oxygen ratio in a room, in some application like data centers or warehouses, they need nitrogen. They have nitrogen generators actually next to their buildings to inject into. So we realized that the nitrogen that we were saying, we just throw it in the air. We can throw
it's
it
actually
in
a
the air.
valuable byproduct.
It's a valuable byproduct that actually they pay pretty expensive machines to do those things. So our system is actually a hydrogen and nitrogen generator in one. And so, again, for your question, you could release it. That's not harmful. So for small scale, we obviously do not use it. But in large scale, it makes all sense. We can also use it internally to clean and to when the system goes into emergency stop, we can use it to make sure there's no oxygen or there's no other gases staying. But yeah, that's what we do with the nitrogen.
Okay. Yeah, really interesting observation, right? That you realize as you go along that the product
Yes.
that you thought had no value, no commercial value, out of a sudden you realize there's sort of this untapped market and there's
Yes.
existing infrastructure in place to actually produce nitrogen where you say, well, that's just a byproduct from the stuff that we don't really focus
Yes.
on, and
Exactly.
realize that there's value to it.
Yes, it's actually the same with water from fuel cells. Usually you say, yeah, water, just release it. But some a client actually want to keep water for their application. Depends on the amount as well. Eh? If you have a very small fuel cell, it doesn't make any sense. But so it's interesting to see when you talk to clients that actually value something you did not realize in the first place. For you, it's like waste. And for them, it's like, no, this is a value. So,
Yeah, and really depends sort of if they use a lot of quantities of water, and then you realize, right, and I guess in the purest form, right, because it's the
yes,
chemical,
exactly.
just the chemical reaction, and that's really great to
Exactly.
see. And I think that brings us perfectly into the second question that I just had before, which is, so now we talked about the fuel cells, and you already mentioned that it depends on the application. So what are use cases for your tech? Where can you use that approach to crack ammonia and turn it into hydrogen, and then use that hydrogen?
So the different use case we're looking at, and that's actually, I would say, the largest challenge that everyone is facing into the hydrogen world is always, where are you going to use it? Especially this is a question that you can ask to any electrolyzer, because they might have some struggles to give. I mean, electrolyzers, if they produce hydrogen, usually they sell it to ammonia producers. But anyway, that's not our use case. We crack ammonia into hydrogen. One of the use cases that is looked at right now, also with clients, is to produce hydrogen for refueling stations. Instead of moving again, if you think of making a network of hydrogen refueling stations in Europe, you would have a network of hydrogen to build. And one way is to say, we don't build a network, we use the existing ammonia distribution network, and we have crackers either locally for regions, and then use spread the hydrogen later on, or directly on site at a station to crack where you need hydrogen. So at the closest you can go to the hydrogen user, the better it is for the whole process. The other application that we have that we foresee is for off-grid power generation. Obviously, if we can bring energy without emissions to heavy industries, it can be telecom, it can be data centers. All those applications that require a large amount of energy and that need to be decarbonized and have an energy transition are potential applications. The challenge here for us is that, but it's not your question, but one of the challenge we
well,
foresee.
It will be.
It will be. One of the challenge we foresee in the direction of fuel cells, if we take fuel cells today, is that we rely on fuel cell technology to scale up as well.
Right.
Which is another technology in itself that needs to ramp up. So therefore, recently we have been approached by combustion engine companies that actually are building combustion engine for hydrogen or ammonia-based that require hydrogen in the process or directly in the combustion as a pilot fuel. And these are the kind of niche application that might be actually quite interesting to look at, because there our cracker small scale make a lot of sense. You don't need huge equipment. For us, it's more closer in our roadmap. And then you can directly have an impact on existing element. You don't need to have the whole chain rebuilt.
Right. Yeah, because also what you're saying there is the risk that if you need fuel cells also to ramp up and improve on efficiency and so on, that's outside of your scope and outside of your hands. So what you're saying with the application that you just mentioned is there you can bring your tech at its best and really deliver impact and value there and don't have to rely on others doing the
Yes.
same in the value chain.
Exactly. I mean, the idea of having, now we are going to the combustion engine discussion, but combustion engine manufacturers, they blend hydrogen in their engines. Blending hydrogen is also nothing really new, but a lot of companies are exploring. You can reduce your CO2 emissions. For them, reducing CO2 emissions means also getting reducing taxes that they have to pay on those. And if you think of a data center, I think it was published recently that data centers of the GAFA is more than certain countries worldwide. I mean, most of the countries. So it's madness the amount of energy we want for AI or whatever we love to
And
use.
that's going to increase a
And it's
lot
just
in
going to
the
increase.
upcoming years,
Exactly.
right?
And it's just the beginning. So if those guys need energy, and usually they are not connected to grids, they have their own microgrids, and they will emit emissions, CO2 emissions. That's one way to reduce while not changing the whole infrastructure. You don't need to go everything fuel cell. You could just inject a little bit of hydrogen, and this blended hydrogen, you don't want to actually have transportation of cylinders to your. So you could have a cracker on site, and whenever you need, you just. So that's one of the application we're looking at. And to your point on fuel cells, yes, that's usually the challenge we get in terms of when we are asked about the market, where we're going, when people rely on a different technology that is also another, let's say, still new, like fuel cells. If fuel cell doesn't make it, doesn't mean we don't make it. No, not necessarily. So we have other routes. Again, the refueling station is a good one. Also because it's stationary, it's large scale, it's different types of customers we're talking to. But yeah, so we have to deal with the market and everything's going around. That's also one
Yeah, I
of
think
our
that's also one
challenges.
of the underlying challenges is, and even going back to my intro, that there's so much talk about hydrogen. There's so much happening. We discussed the different colors, and then
Yes.
you said even we're moving away from the colors, where I guess the majority of the public has only recently learned about the different colors and has realized that there's
Yes.
differences in hydrogen. So right, like this for
Yes.
me, that's there's so much movement. There's so much puzzle pieces being moved and touched at the same time, that it's also hard for companies like yourselves to deal with that uncertainty and that movement in the market, because you can only focus on yourselves and do the job that you do in the best possible way, whilst trying to rely as little as possible on other players to do the same job.
Yes.
And I think then the approach that you shared and mentioned is smart, to de-risk your scale-up process and focus on what you can actually influence.
Yes, you're totally right. That's usually the largest challenge we face, is that we want to focus only on the technology development and our clients to satisfy them with our solution, but then we rely on the rest, and the rest is out of our control. If politicians make announcement that suddenly ammonia or whatever hydrogen is allowed or forbidden or whatever in that use case only, it drives everything, our decision. So we have to be aware, and we sort of have to be lobbyists already. And that's the challenge of, I would say, clean tech. Clean tech, not all startups, but a lot of clean tech startups that come with something that's related to infrastructure, and that's hardware usually, that has such implications to businesses and countries and regulation. That's really something that usually you ignore initially. It's like, I don't care, I'm going to make the best solution ever, and people are going to buy it. Yes, they might buy the initial product, but over time they might ask you, is it really sure I can use this 20 years, or in 10 years I'm going to be stuck with my asset? So yes, navigating this is really the challenge. And
And in
again,
the
it's
energy
politics.
market,
Yes.
and in the energy market in general, we discussed sort of the influence on politics,
Yes.
geopolitics even earlier. I would say any startup, and you just mentioned hardware, I would say even software companies have to deal with the with energy market regulation, which is quite heavy in Europe. And
Yes.
to for clean tech companies to really scale and thrive, it's hard at times because the regulation is not built for solutions that make sense and that have an impact, but rather sort of for the common companies and maybe for the protecting the, more or less the status quo, because that's what's there. And this is why regulation is introduced to, you know, make that work. But when new technology players come to life, we've seen this quite a lot in working with climate tech companies, that, you know, companies with 5 to 10 people are being forced to lobby for their interests and try to influence the public discourse, especially in the direction of politicians, to make sure that their solution is being included in upcoming legislation, or that loopholes are being cut because they are being exploited by incumbents and so on. So I think that's a really interesting role that, you know, the large corporations have public affairs teams with tens of people on them, whereas then the small startups need to do more or less the same job to lobby for their solutions, but, you know, they are 10 people in total, and the majority of them being engineers and not equipped to fight that fight.
And you don't, it's not also something you've foreseen at the beginning. It's like, I'm going to work on doing lobbying about hydrogen or ammonia. I mean, I'm usually saying I do not have any personal interest in ammonia, to actually say I'm not lobbying anything. I'm just trying to see from a technical engineering and also financial perspective that it makes sense. It maybe doesn't make sense for some countries to do it because it has implication on their industries, or this is out of our control, and that's sort of the gray zone, or let's say clouds we have to go through and just hope the sun is at the other, on the other side. Yeah.
Right. Before we look at the future again, and hopefully the sun is, you know, shining, rising, to summarize that part for us, what would you say are the USPs of your tech in a nutshell? So let me try to summarize that first, and then tell me what I've missed and what I've gotten wrong. I'd say it's the ability to have a physical distance between production and consumption of hydrogen. Therefore, what you're doing is, I think your USP is that cracker. This is where the defensible mode of your tech is, that you're able to scale it to from large, small scale, even to large scale applications. So it doesn't really make a difference. I mean, probably it does make a difference from a cost perspective to the end consumer, but you're able to provide the whole value chain with hydrogen solutions, whether then it is small scale to large scale applications. And that I would assume that now that nitrogen also has a value, it's a relatively cost-efficient approach to tackling the whole hydrogen issue. How did I do? Was that good?
It's pretty good. Yeah. I would say you listen to me carefully. No, I mean, it's good. I would say we have some specific USP in terms of technology that we usually have to mention. Again, we heat without emissions. That's actually, there are many startups working on electrical heating or plasma heating, or whatever you can think of heating to replace usual processes. So we have that element also in our reactor. We have new catalysts. There we don't necessarily try to stand out in terms of focusing too much on the catalyst, because it's not just the catalyst, it's the whole system that makes it happen. I mean, you can have the greatest catalyst ever, if your reactor doesn't match with the catalyst, doesn't work. So it's the system is important. And we have something that we focus, and it was a lot of discussion internally, should we go in that direction of purity, or being able to adjust the purity? And this is something we still have, and that we have in our hands. We have different ways of purifications that allow us to go for different application. Now going just to your comment on scale, because I get you sometimes the question of, you can go super large scale. I would say yes, we can, but honestly, I don't think it makes sense. Right. At a certain point, you might do it differently. This is where we see a separation actually between centralized ammonia crackers versus decentralized ones. So we will likely go to a megawatt scale. But then larger than that,
then other technologies take over.
Exactly. And it doesn't, and we don't see clients coming from those. They have megawatt power outputs, for example, combustion engines, but they don't require megawatt level of hydrogen. So that's where the separation will end, and that's fine for us because it's a huge market in itself, and yeah, we are focusing there.
Cool. Well, then, as you just mentioned, we're focusing there. So, how far have you come? So, you know, you mentioned your personal journey from turning the midlife crisis into being the founder and CEO of a business. So how far have you come on that journey of combating the midlife crisis, and how far have you come with Neology?
So we've did quite some route, I would say, because this idea came up when I was in the corporate. So and then when it started, was a lot of questions. So it took quite some time to find which technology, because we're not a spin-off from any university. It's more like taking a business challenge or people looking for enabling hydrogen and say, I'm going to find a solution independently from technology, and I'm going to find a technology to answer that question. And we spent, I would say, 2 years and a half, 2 years to from 2 to 2 years and a half to actually build prototypes of reactors, which integrates the whole system. And we have achieved now a solution that can produce a certain amount of hydrogen, also at different purities, like I mentioned earlier, that we can combine with fuel cells. We do not have the ability in our hands to actually combine it with a combustion engine because that's quite challenging in terms of infrastructure, but now we are having partners that are asking for that.
Right.
And so what we have achieved is, at the moment, is a 5 kilowatt fuel cell integrated ammonia cracker. So we can produce 5 kilowatts of electricity using ammonia, cracking it to hydrogen and getting this to a fuel cell. And we made a vehicle demonstrator that that is equipped with the system on it. And
which looked pretty cool. I was able to see that in Lausanne. So
yes.
that was pretty impressive.
Thank you. So, I mean, the thing is, usually when you explain deep tech or such kind of technology, if you don't have something to show in your hand, even though you have a reactor, it's like, okay, what's going to do this? Where am I going to plug this? So we thought, okay, let's make a demonstration thing that maybe nobody has seen before and that is easy to take to places. So we made a four-wheeler. We thought of a boat, but then boats, you're limited to where
that's
you
certain challenges,
water. But actually, boat is interesting because of maritime application.
But then if you go to trade shows, they're hardly ever directed by the water, so it makes your life a lot harder. Yeah.
Yes. So the mini truck is quite cool because we just mounted on it. We also can remove it and put it in our lab. Doesn't make any difference for us. The thing is really to demonstrate that we can make electricity from ammonia initially, convert it into hydrogen in the middle. And this is what we have done up to now. We also have now designed the larger scale. So I would say we are ready to produce or manufacture with our partners the 1 kilogram of hydrogen per hour. So that's a 10 times larger unit than what you see on the vehicle. And this is for industrial applications that we are getting from our clients. This is where we are going. We expect this to happen in 2025. For this, we're also fundraising. So this is all the things happening, I mean, as usual, startup. But this is what we have achieved recently. And we are negotiating certain commercial agreements with clients around the world, again, for different applications. All the ones I mentioned earlier, the refueling station, the fuel cell application, and the combustion engines. That's basically the 3 R being asked.
Sounds like you're doing really well, and it sounds like you have busy days as well in terms of everything that you
yes,
want to do and
sure.
have to do.
Yes, busy for sure. Yes.
So, towards the end of our conversation, I'd love to know sort of where, you know, we're nearing the end of 2024. If you could dream, where would you be in 3 to 5 years? What do you want to have achieved? What should have happened?
So I could give you my personal answer and then the one I have in my roadmap, but I can make a mix of it. In general, the feeling I have for hydrogen is going to take more time than what people expect. Usually you see projects, oh, we'll do this, takes much more time to implement. This is something we also integrate now in our roadmap, not to be over optimistic or completely unrealistic from implementation. So I would say in 3 to 5 years, what we're expecting as a company is to have our solution deployed at different sites. Again, having demonstration of maybe new applications. The ones I mentioned with the nitrogen is a very interesting one. I don't think this is where we'll focus initially. The different purities to investigate which one makes more sense, and also try to get support in terms of going back to your comment on regulations, to make sure we are going to an industry and implementation that we do not get blocked over the following years. So this is something we'll have to navigate now that we scale up, that we create pilots. Usually when you do a pilot, you don't really care about this, but we are going to pilot with clients. And this is where we might have to actually not decline, but adjust some pilots to say, look, this is never going to happen in 5 years. Maybe it's 15. So let's put aside this one or let's slightly adapt. And the only thing I hope is that we have achieved to demonstrate at scale. And then we can then really move into industrialization of our solution. Because we see demand, it's ramping up. It's for sure not, I would say, the most demanded product. I think more now it's AI probably or something in that sense. But the big corporations that are preparing the landscape for hydrogen and ammonia, when they are ready on the market, they will just ask, where is it? Have you done it? So we have to get ready in parallel, which is the challenge for a startup, is to make sure the timing is fit. And that's why we fundraise, because clients don't want to pay for something not finished. So this is where we navigate. So I hope in 5 years we have a larger team, production and system in place,
Yeah. And I guess the one additional part that you have mentioned sort of in between the lines is the challenge for a startup is that focus. You know, you just said you have customer demand, there's interest into your solution. And at the same time, with a small team and with limited resources, you can only do so much. So for you, it's really important to do those projects that will get you closer to the finish line of being, and the finish line there being the full commercial rollout of your tech, and then also saying, look, this project is super important, but not right now. It will come later down the road. Let's focus on the stuff that actually matters right now.
Yes, that's clearly one of advice I receive from usually any coach or any people I talk. Stay focused, because as an entrepreneur, you're so excited with new ideas. I had recently a new one that came completely out of nowhere. I thought that's super cool. But just have to say that stay cool. And I just keep it on my desk, see how we can navigate. Of course, there might be an opportunity to look at. So it's just not to ignore it, just to take some time to look at it. And then decide if the pivot in terms of strategy or market needs to happen to make sure the team is aware. Exactly. Is it worth it? And that is communicated. So not suddenly, oh, guys, now we are doing for that application and people, oh, wow, that's completely different. So this is a challenge in itself. Also getting the team adjusted to the application, because you're going to that one direction, suddenly you realize it's not this technology you need to master, but something else. Right. And you have hired the expert in that domain. So this is something to take into consideration. Yeah.
I guess moving fast and making adjustments that are necessary is one of the skills that you really learn running a startup.
Yes.
Well, then, and attached to that is my final question to you for today, which is going back to I guess where we started, which is, you know, the midlife crisis. I'm going to use that analogy once more. You left corporate life, which I would assume was, you know, nice and comfortable, to run a startup, which is also nice, but comes with its own challenges. We just mentioned, you know, the amount of work that you want and need to do, the speed in which you need to pivot, which corporates never experience. So what is it that keeps you going on a daily basis? Because you could have stayed in the corporate domain and live your life, comfortable life, and you've chosen a different path for yourself. So what is it that, you know, makes you get up in the morning and spend yet another day trying to build a technology that the world really needs to deliver that clean transition?
Yeah, that's a very good, it's probably the most important question that even my wife asks me sometimes. Are you sure about what you're doing? Why are you waking up? What are you doing? What are you doing in your office? Because I'm saying, we have new opportunities. And then it's only like, but what does that link to your purpose? And I would say that the main driving factor for me initially was to bring energy solutions, decarbonize energy solutions. That was really the motivation. I thought there is something we can do there. That goes also with my background of electrical engineering. I was always focused into energy systems. It can be for automotive or anything. Automotive is being a machine that needs a lot of energy to move for. It's just a fact. So optimization of these is something that interests me, and being able to have a, I would say, geopolitically free way of making energy, like independency. This is something that motivates, for example, having the ability to produce your own energy, to store it and to use it. This is something that motivated me, and that's where it took me to do the Neology. Now, what makes me wake up in the morning is that I see the light at the end. I see that we are doing something that people say, it kind of makes sense. Just do it now. So this motivation is definitely something that allows me to wake me up. And yeah, it's a roller coaster, but you know that it's going down and it's going up just afterwards. So it's a matter of being able to go through this with resilience. And having seen what we achieved in 2 years, having the team makes me believe that we have something interesting to continue working on. So I don't want to give up at the moment. There's no chance for giving up. It's only pushing for success.
Yeah. And it feels like that the independence that you just mentioned on the energy level seems also to be like the personal value of that you value and sort of independence of running your own company much more than living the corporate life that comes with its own strings and sort of a very limited scope, whereas in the startup life I think you have a lot more freedom.
Yes.
So I think that's a really interesting theme to end this conversation on, that, you know, striving for independence is actually a whether that and then the product helps you do so in multiple ways. I think that's a very positive note to end us on.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, corporate life, just it's good. You have those great times. You have a lot of things you cannot do in a startup that you can do in a corporate. You have more freedom. You don't necessarily have nightmares about your own company failing. You might have nightmares for your corporate failing, but it's a different thing. And when you're running your own independent company and making the decisions together with the team, this is something that you can also do in corporate, but the impact is completely different. And this is what drives me. And yeah, I guess independence is clearly something, a theme around the discussion we had today. Yes. So it's a good observation you had.
Thank you. Well, it was lovely talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing the progress. Such an interesting technology. Fingers crossed. And I'm looking forward to seeing your take on the four-wheeler over and over at locations and events, just for more people to understand what you actually do. And then looking forward to seeing you thrive, grow, and for us all to see the light at the end of the tunnel. Thank you so much for spending time with me today.
Thank you, Jan. It was great.